Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
Hey, what do you know about spectrum of care? I mean, we're going to go there to our listeners there. Welcome back to the Vet Blast podcast. And joining us is our wonderful friend and colleague, Dr. Emily Tincher from Nationwide. How are you, my friend?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me, Adam.
Good to see you. We want to thank our friends at Nationwide for sponsoring this episode. And a little bit of information about our friend, Dr. Emily Tincher, who joined Nationwide in 2021. She's a collaborative and data-informed leader who advocates for a pet parent-centered approach to communication in medicine through spectrum of care methods. She's a second-generation veterinarian. I love that. And it feeds into what we're going to chat about a little bit.
It does.
And a 2016 graduate of Auburn University's College of Veterinary Medicine. Go...
War Eagle.
You know it.
It's go Tigers or just War Eagle. No go in between.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. See?
Today I learned.
The more you know. So after completing an internship, she worked as an emergency practitioner in a specialty referral hospital near Philadelphia, serving as a field veterinarian for Nationwide, speaking at veterinary schools through a program affiliated with the Veterinary Business Management Association. As the senior director of pet health at Nationwide, she oversees operations and strategy in the areas of pet health programs, animal health industry relationships, and outreach to veterinary students and veterinary teams. She has become a sought-after speaker, most recently on spectrum of care topics, presenting at major veterinary conferences across the country. And I did hear you speak at AVMA this past year, and it was a fantastic job. You did a great job.
Thank you. It was great for you. Nice of you to come and give us some thoughts.
Yes, thank you. And a big shout-out to Dr. Jules Benson, who was there, too. You guys had a great dynamic that was there. I loved it.
We love speaking together.
Yeah, it shows. It definitely shows. So to the listeners, if you don't mind, let's kind of like just break it down a little bit, because I do think that spectrum of care can be a little bit confusing. So what is the term spectrum of care?
Yeah, it might even be helpful to take one step back further and say, let's talk a little bit about what access to care is. So we've been talking more and more about the fact that up to 50% and potentially even more than that, it's hard to find these folks, up to 50% of U.S.-owned cats and dogs don't see a veterinarian on a regular basis. Oof. Or on an annual basis. And so looking at a definition of access to care, there are lots of different ways that we can increase the access that pets and their pet families have to veterinary care. And access to care includes lots of different things. Pet insurance is one way that has been shown to increase access to care. If we think about how the term is most frequently used right now, even though it can mean everything from pets not seeing a vet to increasing access to specialty care, most of the time we're hearing the term access to care associated with low cost or more basic levels of care, sometimes shelter care or rural medicine, even though it can be a little bit more of a broad umbrella term that spectrum of care fits in. So practicing across the spectrum of care, which is having a range from basic to advanced of acceptable diagnostic and treatment options that meet pet families where they are with regard to their goals and their values and their finances. That is one way that we can increase access to care, no matter what your setting is, either within your practice or thinking about advanced level care, sometimes including specialty referral, or basic care might even include like stratification here. So how do we kind of send people to different locations like a vaccine clinic too? Mm.
I love that. And I'm thinking more of access to care when we're thinking such a shortage of, you know, veterinary professionals these days. A lot of clinics nowadays are going into the virtual space, too, just providing some, you know, virtual telehealth consultations with their clients if they can't get to the veterinarian, or maybe some of these practices are in these desert locations that they're calling them now. So yeah. I think that's another great stratification, if you will, of like learning about access to care as well, right?
Yeah, I love that. All of our insured pets, so a Nationwide member, have access to teletriage service 24/7. So we have seen, just sometimes even it's just answering those questions, not even providing telemedicine, which I think has the potential to increase access to care over time, but just trying to help relieve the phone calls that receptionists are taking so that veterinarians can really focus and their teams can really focus on providing the care that needs to be there in the hospital.
Yeah, I even call it peace of mind medicine, too, like for telehealth. You know, sometimes they just need to know if they need to be seen now or if it's something that can wait till tomorrow. You know?
Well, as an ER doctor, I sure hated to see people come in when they were so anxious about what turned out to be a nipple.
Right.
Male cats have nipples.
Yes.
Multiple times, right. Seen that in the ER.
I can imagine, I know. And, you know, along the lines of spectrum of care, you're a second-generation veterinarian, so this is something that's very close to your heart, right?
It is. So growing up in my parents' general practice in rural Kentucky, I saw them really apply a spectrum of care before we knew the term for that existed. So really just seeing, I think Parvo is a really great example. Now we know there are some great protocols for outpatient treatment that have good outcomes. So are you familiar with the Colorado State Protocol for Parvo?
Of course.
Yeah, it's amazing when we're talking to vet healthcare teams that sometimes we still just have to keep talking about it because they haven't heard about this protocol that really the survival rate and the chances of having a happy, healthy puppy at the end are about 8 in 10. Whereas hospitalization, which can often be thousands of dollars more, is 9 in 10. So better chance still. And when pet families want to do absolutely everything and they can afford it, hospitalization is still usually the right answer. But even sometimes seeing and myself practicing really basic level care when neither of those things are an option, just knowing that an outpatient protocol exists and has really good success rates even allows us to say, okay, well, if that's, you know, $600 to $800 isn't possible, what does it look like to have a more basic option based off of that? I can feel more comfortable offering that and knowing I've saved some puppies' lives by trying that makes it really gratifying to just try and meet pet families where they are, knowing sometimes it's not everything that we wish it was.
Right, absolutely. I know Nationwide is very involved with Spectrum of Care as an insurance company. And share with the listeners, if you don't mind, about that wonderful survey that Nationwide did and share some of those results.
Yeah, for us it all started with some market research in 2019, where we have really cool things at a large Fortune 100 company, like an innovation team, and they helped us out with some market research. And one of their top findings was that pet families, the kind of advanced level care that we learn in vet school, clashes with the expectations of pet families. And so we really started to take that and pair it with the fact that the cost of care is rising. No matter where you look, whether that's our claims, whether you look outside at publicly available information like the Consumer Price Index for veterinary services, inflation and cost of care is just significantly higher than it has been in recent years. Let me put those things together and say, sometimes it's about finances and sometimes it's not. And if pet families aren't always looking for that advanced care, what's the alternative? What is it that would be a success and a win for them? And so we dove a little bit deeper last summer. We partnered with Rehavior to try and uncover what are the subconscious drivers behind the level of pet care that pet families are seeking. And knowing that we have this range of options available to us with differing levels of evidence-based care, how do we know how to tailor those conversations so they can be efficient? We don't have a ton of time in every exam room. And so we partnered again with Rehavior to understand this by talking to almost 1,000 pet families. And the results were that, first of all, not only is it biased, it's just wrong if you try and use any type of demographic to put people into groups. Because across socioeconomic status, household income, race and ethnicity, gender and marital status, almost equally people break down into three different groups. And those three different groups could help us really have more efficient conversations and meet people where they are sooner, feel a little bit less frustrated as we're talking to them about their options. So what's maybe the top one that would come to your mind when you're thinking about why people choose the care they do.
Money.
It's often money, right? Like, yeah. It's not always that. Like, sometimes people really do have other ways that they make their decisions. We'll talk about the other two groups first, but no vet healthcare team will be surprised to hear that there's a group of people that are very cost focused when they're making their decisions. What I thought was really impactful personally is that this group is also the group that really, really cares about how we talk to them. They are desperate for what ultimately the clinical, the skill of clinical empathy. So how do we seek to understand what they have going on and then communicate that back to them and then change something about how we offer the options that we do. They really don't want to feel judged for the fact that they are either unable or unwilling to commit sometimes as much financially as we wish they might. So cost is, of course, it's probably the first one that comes up for most of us, because it can be a really tricky barrier. So the next group, I think, is one that I often fit into. It's convenience. Yeah. So how do we have pet families that will make decisions based on what is most convenient to fit into their schedule. Now, it could sound like a group of jerks if you just think about it superficially like that. But again, I think I'm mostly in this group. And a lot of times, if we think about the pet family factors that are outside of the pet, it makes a lot of sense. So if you have a 12 or a 13, a 14-hour workday, like I did when I was in emergency medicine, if you are someone who, like you and I now, travels for work, or if you have kids at home that are going 12 different directions and you're trying to juggle everything else and the pet has, the ear infection going on, how can you make all those things fit into your really busy life? Suddenly then compromising on, they might be willing to pay more. They might be willing to kind of escalate to that intermediate or advanced level care if we can help them save some time. In really practical ways, like how can we limit rechecks to the clinic? How can we consider treatments that are, one time in the clinic with us, like an injection or a long-acting ear medication? This might be the kind of folks like they want to do a few more diagnostics while you're here today, as opposed to the cost-focused folks who might actually prefer to come back tomorrow if, the supportive symptomatic care doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so many are in that group. I really do. And simple things is, how many times did you want me to soak those feet?
Well, I think at some point we're all in that group, right?
We all have
a limit.
Okay, so and then what's the third group?
The third group is really interesting to me. I think they might be the group that we wouldn't have thought of. Both of those two, they make sense to me instantly. So this group, they are labeled by choice, and so they really want to know what all their options are. Mm-hmm. So as we think about, in general, I think many of us have a three-option rule, so come up with our range of diagnostic and treatment care options from basic to advanced. Usually there are three options. Sometimes in really bad things, euthanasia is one of them. Usually there are three options. This is a group that really wants to know about those options from you, their veterinary healthcare team, not from someone else. They don't want to find out later. The best way to build trust with them is they want to hear what they can do for their pet. They're really, really focused on their pet's health. And associated with that, they love to hear about the odds of things going well. So they want to hear about that evidence-based medicine a little bit more than the other groups do, so that they can make the decision that is most focused on their pet's health. They are pretty likely to choose intermediate to advanced level care, but they are also the most bonded to their general practitioner. They actually really want to stay with you if they possibly can, unless you to tell them it's best for their pet's health that they potentially go to a referral or a different site.
Yeah, they're very GP-centric.
They're very GP-centric. They are. Yeah, they love that bond.
Yeah, it is. It's so true. I think that whenever I have to refer a client out there, like, where are you sending me? What's happening? What's going on? They feel like it's a breakup.
Yeah, they do.
Right?
They do, yeah.
And it's so true. They if I wish I could do it all, I say, but we can. As veteran, we have wonderful colleagues that can.
Yeah.
But I just think it's so important, so, so crucial to your point when we first started chatting about communication and being transparent with them and letting them know what does that patient journey look like for their pet, right?
Absolutely. I think the really interesting things about this research that we're working on publication as well for 2024, the kind of uniting factors that all three groups felt the same way about were important and insightful for us too. The top one is that all of those three groups, they make decisions pretty differently, right? Like especially
sure.
the cost-focused person versus outcomes and kind of choice-focused person. It's a pretty different decision-making process. They all think that their way leads to their pet's health being protected and that their pet's health is really important to them. I think that's sometimes really hard for us because if they're not treating their pet the way that we would treat them, if they were our pet, that can be hard.
Right.
So we have to take a little step back and I think try to remove the feeling that pet parents can interpret as judgment
yeah.
when we can, because their pet's health is important to them. It just also has to fit into the rest of their family.
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, it got me thinking about how we perceive the human-animal bond, too.
Mm-hmm.
We all have different perceptions of it. I mean, I think we value it very, very strong, obviously. And a lot of our clients do, too. But then you do have those clients that are coming in saying, I literally just want the rabies vaccine. You can talk to me until I'm blue in the teeth about getting a dental cleaning, but I just want to do the bare minimum. And
yeah.
again, to your point, like we really should not be placing judgment. They're there to protect, and we're trying to help eradicate rabies. So it's part of the
coming in to see you is
right.
already more than 50% of
yeah.
disproportionately cats not coming in, but
right.
They're already coming in to see you, which is more than some pets are receiving. So that opportunity to educate without
sure.
you know making them feel ashamed or like that basic level of care. Is bad might provide us the opportunity to build that relationship and have them come back
right.
to see us again, maybe for something beyond that rabies vaccine.
Yes, yeah, and just an avoidance of placing judgment on them and or preconceived ideas. Something
yeah.
that I think a lot of veterinary hospitals are doing more and more with them. I'm seeing at their team building exercises, they're having at their lunch and learns, not to shut that door and be like, oh, Dr. Smith, like this one's a pill and a half, you know?
Yeah.
Because it really can just automatically set the tone before you go in there and already assume, well, I'm not gonna recommend or dispense or whatever it is. So I think just kind of setting the groundwork ahead of time, knowing like, let's have a conversation first and see where it leads, I think is important.
Yeah, just understanding what are the goals and the values and
yeah.
how might this pet family fit into one of those three groups and how can I talk to them that way? I think that's a really great point about just before you walk into the exam room to talk to them or get on the phone, it can feel, if we don't adopt that feeling of meeting them where they are, sometimes it can feel adversarial when
yes,
we're having
yes.
these conversations. And
yes.
boy, that makes my day go by a whole lot longer. If I feel like upset or anxious that I couldn't convince someone to do something, the thing is, people are sometimes not going to change their minds, and we're not going to be able to convince them to do the most advanced level of care in every case. I think any of us who have been in clinics know that. I think we have to release ourselves from the pressure of feeling like we have to change every mind, because that's not reality.
Right.
Whether it's, you know, financially they can't afford it, which is a big barrier, but it's not the only one. Or whether that's just not to your point, like I'm here for basic care. I'm here for rabies, and currently there are fleas on the dog,
yeah.
so let's do a flea treatment, but then I don't want to do anything else right now.
Yeah.
As much as we can, trying to think about, okay, well, how can I help this pet today, and how can we build a relationship and a bond without them feeling shamed, is just helping. One of our kind of slogans associated with Spectrum of Care is more care for more pets. So help that pet receive a little bit more care next time, especially if something comes up later where they're sick, helping the pet family to feel that trust in us that they can bring their pet in.
Yeah, absolutely. Fantastic. This has been such a great discussion. Thank you so much, Dr. Emily Tinger and our friends at Nationwide for supporting this great conversation. Like I said to our listeners, you got to take a listen or sit in on one of their sessions throughout the next year, 2024. It's fantastic content. It's very relevant. We hear it a lot here at DVM 360. So thank you for sharing some of your wisdom and insight with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And thank you to our friends for tuning in. Don't forget to rate this wonderful podcast as always. It helps us out significantly. And we'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast Podcast. Take care, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast Podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay pawsome.